you've got to consider the fact that you've changed. And what was normal to you back then.
Okay.
Let's see, I got these quizzes here.
I think that's weird. You should go down to Hollywood.
Oh.
I went through.
You don't need a passport again.
Is it just going to be like this one on me now?
A little bit. I'll tell you about it in just a minute here.
Okay.
Here you all are.
And it was
in stores. Question came up concerning the quiz, the next quiz and last quiz. First of all, the date, did we firmly establish that for next Wednesday, or did we just tentatively?
Tentatively.
Okay. For the Hebrew students, that'd be the best day. And is it? The week after that, yeah. I don't want to get in trouble with the Hebrew students here, so. So we'll make it a Wednesday. And what's the date next Wednesday? Tomorrow's
19th.
Okay. It will consist of these following things. First, the perfect and pluperfect of Luo. Perfect and pluperfect of Luo. And the optative of Luo. So it'll be analogous to this last quiz in that respect. And then what I'm going to do is give you a few sentences to translate from Greek to English. They'll be in Greek. And what you'll have to do is there'll be conditionals, and you'll have to identify type A, B, or C, and then translate. So review your type A, B, and C conditionals and the things that determine those. Then translate. And also, for the translation of those sentences, be familiar with the compound verbs of Luo. In fact, I'll just tell you that on page 279, there's a list of about seven compound verbs of Luo, and it will only consist of those. In other words, I may throw one of those verbs in as far as translation, and you know, so that you can recognize it. You've got Ana Luo, Apo Luo, Dia Luo, Ek Luo Mai, Epi Luo, Kata Luo, and Para Luo. Those seven on page 279.
Mike, that's Hanukkah. I don't think we can.
That's Hanukkah? Oh, no. You're kidding.
It's not kosher
here. Yeah, right. Well, not a Hebrew test, only a Greek test.
I don't know. Hanukkah, I can only speak Hebrew.
Those type A, type B, type C clauses are page 273 for how to identify those. And we could probably do a little bit of review on Thursday or so this week on that to take any questions and so forth that may come up. Okay, does everybody have that? Perfect and pluperfect of Luo, optative of Luo, the type A, type B, type C clauses to be able to recognize those. And the translations will always be, I'll give you the Greek and you give me the English.
Yeah.
And I won't be striving for lots of obscure vocabulary words or anything. Yes.
Good. Will it be about the same language?
Probably a little bit longer than that, but maybe not much. In other words, with the verb
like
forms.
With about
like that, with the addition of a few translations. Okay. Good. Well, today let's continue in John 1 then. I believe we left off somewhere around verse 15, 16, somewhere in that neighborhood. 15 is the last one, okay. So 16's up next, and looks like John's still got the hot seat, so we'll give him first crack at it. You would? Oh, you guys got good memories.
You have to. Depends on whether you're in the hot seat or not.
Yeah, right. How good your memory is, yeah. Okay, go ahead, John. We'll just start over there. And, yeah.
Hodiak 2, Veronicos, out 2.
Okay.
Because out of his fullness, we all have received.
Right.
And grace against grace, or grace instead of grace, or grace.
Yeah.
For grace.
Grace instead of grace, yeah. Grace for grace is a, grace against grace, in other words.
Grace.
This on T is used this way. It's used for things that are up against one another. And it can be a hostile relationship, or it can be non-hostile relationship, you know, one against the other. In other words, grace against grace, it's kind of indicating a progressive thing, either progressive or a multiplied grace here. It's interesting too. This elabomen is an aorist form, but you translate it pretty much like a perfect here, just because of the context. Okay. Questions? Go ahead.
Because I would just say that they've got in verse 15, it's like period, and that's completion of the thought.
Yeah.
So how does Hoti fit in there? I mean, it's not really because, is it?
Well, it's the trouble is you can make it because, even in the sense that it is tying back to the previous one, the punctuation is pretty much up to the editors and so forth anyway. But even so, you can begin something with because. You can begin a sentence with it even if it's tying into what went before. The problem with translating it that, hoti is usually translated that when it's introducing. The phrase it introduces is functioning as a part of the previous sentence or the previous clause. In other words, if it's functioning as a direct object, or you know, he believed that such and such, or, you know, in other words, when it's functioning as the entire thing is functioning as a subordinate unit of the previous one, rather than starting a new clause that's giving a ground or reason for the other one. So I think that's your major distinction there, and it gets a little bit. That's the basic guideline, let's put it that way. But of course, since we're dealing with two different languages, it's not going to come out 100% clear in each case.
I'm going to say probably is because OT doesn't mean because of that, it means OT.
Yeah, right. That's exactly it. That's exactly it. And I think if you're, you know, to use the word that, is if you're in doubt about it, I'd probably prefer using the word that, because it doesn't commit you so much. But if it's pretty clear from the context and so forth that this is a grounds for something else, etc., then because is fine. Okay, and those are the kinds of things that are deserving of analysis. You know, if it's a real critical situation with theological and so forth, you do need to consider both options and consider the possibilities involved. But like you said, a hoti means hoti. It doesn't mean anything else. Okay. That brings us to verse 17 then, and Jim. Okay.
Because through the law of Moses,
the verb is edothe, was given. Okay. And the subject is nomos. The law was given dia mo useos, through Moses. The law was given through Moses.
Okay, the law given through Moses.
Mm-hmm.
The grace and truth came to be through Jesus Christ.
Okay. Yes. The grace and truth through Jesus Christ came to be. Yeah. Okay. Question here. Would you say that this agency here, Diamo Useos, was a direct agency or an indirect agency?
Indirect.
anybody. Yeah, Eric?
Indirect.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's indirect. The passive form wouldn't necessarily do that, but the fact that it's dia rather than hupo. If you want direct agency, then hupo with the genitive is what's used. So, you know, in which case it would be saying the law was given by Moses rather than the law was given through Moses. But you can see here that the fact that an indirect agency is used is appropriate because Moses was not the originator of the law. It was given through him. God was the one that gave the law through Moses. And also, in like manner, grace and truth is given through Jesus Christ, not by him as the source of it, referring to humanity, but it's given through him.
Interesting.
By God.
Distinction between Heterodei and Heterodei. Was given versus.
Yes, came to be. Uh-huh.
Came to be.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, it's coming to be through Jesus Christ. There's a connection to even, you might ask the question, well, how could truth come to be through Jesus Christ? But it's tying you right back to the Logos in the beginning. It's tying you back to that concept that's in the very beginning. And Jesus is the epitome and expression of that. And through his blood and so forth, we have access to all of this. So it's really quite remarkable. It's worth paying attention to some of these things. When it says dia, or whether it says hupo, or whether it says en, you know, there's different pictures in all of those that often get translated the same way in English. Like on this one, I think King James says the law came. Well, how does King James say the law came through Moses, but grace and truth by Jesus? I think they say by Jesus Christ. Came by Moses in both cases. Okay, that's just it's typical of the confusion that is wrought when the English preposition by is used so frequently. Okay. Yes. Go ahead.
In the first, there are two clauses really in opposition to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
But the law is given passive, but grace and truth came to be.
Uh-huh.
It's just what is that? Just an error.
Yeah, it's a deponent verb, of course, from ginomai, but in technically it would be the second aorist middle form, but of course your middle forms are giving active meaning, so in effect you have an aorist active form. In other words, effectively you do, since there aren't any active forms. And of course the verb itself is an equative verb, so that makes it a little bit more nebulous as far as assigning. Equative verbs are hard to assign whether they're active or passive or whatever, you know. Technically, we probably call them active, but still, there's no real action being performed. Yeah. Although, ginomai's got more of an action sense than ame does. You've got a becoming type of an idea, so you can conceive of that, I suppose, as an action. Yes?
The agento, it even more clearly ties it back, because in verse 3, it says, ponte di altru agento.
Mm-hmm.
All that came to be.
Yes.
Through him.
And now it's being more specific, and it's showing that was with reference to the Logos, and now this is with reference to Christ, with the expression of it.
This is more theological, but the Honomos is an apposition that, in a sense, the Hei Charis and Hei Alexia.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And yet it's not a true.
It's not really an apposition. It's maybe a contrast, but it's in the same position. Yeah, the law on the one hand, and grace and truth on the other hand. And there isn't any Allah or anything here, and there's not even a deh here. It's just kind of a pause and a kind of an abrupt change when you start with a nominative again, and you get a sense of contrast from this. Yeah.
But it's not a real strong
contrast. No, it's not. I think the contrast comes more from the theological meaning of the words, law versus grace. You know,
right.
I mean, you have a certain kind of a contrast that's set up there. It's not really a hostility, but it is a contrast in terms of the kind of thing that's going on. And of course, the entire Old Testament, you see the law, and now you're seeing grace and truth through Jesus Christ. It's not implying that there was no truth in the Old Testament either, but it's just saying that this is the fulfillment of all of that.
In a sense, and this is theological, you could say. Perhaps that the truth and the grace that is seen in the law,
mm-hmm.
is because it came to be in the Logos,
right.
Or was in
right.
the Logos, really, and that's what
sure.
should be. In terms of grace and truth,
mm-hmm.
in the Old Testament, also.
Yeah, see, that's why we need to be careful not to make too much of a contrast here, because it's an unfolding revelation, is really what you're seeing. Yes, Mark.
The point I was going to make is that Kai is used, and it's not Allah or
right,
death.
Right.
So it would tend to show that this is something being.
added to what the law was given for.
Yeah. I think the only real contrast is the source, you know, Moses on one hand and Christ on the other hand, being different individuals, but not a different revelation or not something that's contrary or hostile or anything else. It's just that flow, you know, the old covenant, you have this, and now you come to the other. So the contrast is in a further revelatory sense, not in the sense of something overthrowing what's before or hostile to it. Okay, then we get to the fun verse 18. There you go, Dan.
Saon, Udei, Saorakin, Popota, Monogene, Sao, Soon, Eiton, Topo, Tupaso, Sainon, Exegetico.
Okay.
And I'm pretty much lost. I'm totally like. Could you tell me what
Heorakin? Heorakin means to, let's see, to have seen. It's from Horao, and it's a perfect form. So no man has seen. And then your object is the first word in the sentence, that one is your accusative.
So how do you get
men out there? Well, Udes, no one, yeah, we better say, no one has seen.
So no one has seen God
at any time. It'd be interesting to see how you translate this.
The special one, the unique one, that's what he said.
Yeah, right. Good. And there's no article there, so this is really a source of a lot of controversy, because there's a question here as to whether you take this monogenes as an adjective modifying theos, or whether you take it as a substantive in apposition to theos.
So,
see what I mean?
That's the thing, God, special one, unique one.
Possibly, yeah. If you take it as a substantive in apposition, you could say an only unique one, theos, an only unique one, God, or an only unique God is what the only other thing you could say. But since that's a tough one, because you know, for one thing, monogenes, if you take it as only begotten, then it can't modify God, because God's not begotten. So if you take it as monogenes, meaning unique one, and so forth, and the fact that God is in the is anarthrous, a pretty good translation would be something like, if you take it as an adjective, an only unique divine one, a special unique divine one, which is in the bosom of the Father. That's one possibility. And the other possibility would be just taking an only unique one, who is God, comma, God, he has revealed him. I'm inclined to favor the idea of an only unique divine one. It seems to be the best overall, in my opinion, but there's a lot of difference of opinion on this, so don't. We've got a paper, the preliminary version was 61 pages long just on this verse. On the manuscript variations and so forth. Of course, the manuscript variations are involved here, Theos versus Huios. And on the whole, Theos seems to have the upper hand as far as, if you look at the example, the manuscripts down here, P66, Aleph, B, C, so forth, it's pretty good support. But it's not quite as simple an issue as some of the others. It's got lots of interesting twists to it. So we'll spare you that for right now. So something like an only unique divine one, something like that, would be more appropriate here. Because monogenes does not come from genao, but from genomai. And so the idea of only, you know, becoming only, becoming special, that type of an idea, rather than being born. No implications of birth in the word. Yes?
You always think of the ultimate and the divine.
Possibly. The reason I translated it that way in this context is because without the article, it's emphasizing qualities or characteristics rather than identity. That's kind of a general rule. And that may be true for several different reasons. It may be, in fact, that you're talking about the identity of God, and I think you are even here too, but the emphasis is upon one who is divine, you know, one who has those qualities and characteristics, rather than emphasizing the identity. So it's a matter of emphasis more than anything else. But that's a real interesting passage. You see, you've got some different sense, because you just talked about no man has seen God at any time, and then you say, and then turns around and says, an only begotten divine one who's in the bosom of the Father, he hath explained him. I'm giving you the rest of this, but you're saying on the one hand that no man's seen God, and then you're saying on the other hand that this one is explaining him. So this one can't be God in the same sense that the God that you can't see was God. In other words, there's got to be something different about this situation, and just from the context. And that would suggest again that we're talking about one who is God, but who's also unique and special in the mind of God, and so forth. Some who take this as monogenesis, as I think Vincent says it this way, he takes monogenesis as begotten, which I don't think is correct, but even if you do that, he says the sense must be one who is both begotten and God. And that's a proper understanding as far as the dual nature is concerned. Okay, so that's one of the most interesting. Why don't you go ahead with the last part of it, though, anyway. Ho on a stone cold phone to patros, ekinos exegesito.
What did you say?
Exegesito is be explain or exegesis, you know, we get the word exegesis from it.
Okay.
As it means to explain or expound or interpret or something along those lines.
The divine one, the one, mm-hmm. I guess we translate all one here, right? The one in the bosom of...
Yeah, the one being in the bosom. Mm-hmm.
The one being in the bosom of the Father that explained him.
Yeah, there's no him there, actually, but that one explained. It's kind of literal, but it kind of leaves you hanging. If, you know, in English, to make it complete, we almost have to put the him in there. Greek will often not repeat something like that, though, if it's pretty clear. Because referring back to theon there, in the very first, in the beginning of the verse. Because that's the one that was the issue, is God being explained here all along. So, yeah, we might say that one explained him. You might put the him in parentheses or something if this was on a test or something, and you didn't really want to put him down because it wasn't in the text. You might just leave it and then maybe put a parenthesis or something like that. Okay, verse 19. Was there another question on this? Glenn, did you have a question there? Is that taken care of?
No.
Okay. Okay, Eric, verse 19.
And this I don't say him. Hey, Matuja to Ioannou, Ote Apeteleia, Poinudaio et Jerusalemum, Eireis Caelitas, Ina Eruteis, Sotin, Aton, Sutisei.
Okay, good.
And this is the witness of John, when the Jews sent, or the Jews out of Jerusalem,
mm-hmm.
priests, and Levites, in order that they might ask him, who are you?
Okay. Yeah, they sent toward him, the prosauton is in parentheses there, but, you know, the priests and the Levites and so forth sent toward him in order that they might question him. Who are you? Sutis A. Okay. You, who are you? Basically.
What do they mean? Did you say it in the text or?
Yeah, there's a questionable reading, and they didn't give all the apparatus, or did they? No, they didn't. Yeah.
If there's a disputation of whether it belongs there or not,
yeah.
Among scholars, but it doesn't necessarily be, I'm not sure.
They probably didn't consider it important enough to go through the whole apparatus on it.
Square brackets are used to enclose words, a portion of words whose presence or position is technically regarded as disputed.
Yeah. Okay. Westcott and Hort has it in too. Didn't put brackets around it, but okay. Any other questions on that? It's getting easier now because we're going to start getting just more historical narrative. That's a lot easier than dealing with. Okay, verse 20 then, Glenn. Okay. Yep.
And he, I want to get that. I know it means testify, but
mm-hmm.
what it's said uniformly almost.
Yeah.
Stated uniformly, and denied not, and. he stated uniformly that I am not the Christ.
Right, okay. Ego ukemi ho Christos, pretty emphatic. This homologus from homologeo, it means to say the same thing, is basically the idea. Homo means same. And to say the same thing is confess, you know, to agree, to confess, you know, that type of thing. So that's the sense of it there. And he did not deny. These are both aorist forms. And notice the omega in the beginning of homologus. Can you surmise what the omega is?
I thought that was the change in the augment.
Right, exactly. Yeah, the verb starts out with an omicron, and then for the augment, when you have something we start with an omicron, it becomes omega. Yeah, exactly.
So it's not a, I guess I'm trying to, homo is not a...
Not a prepositional one, no. This one is, this is kind of good, because it is built up from two different root words, but this is not a compound verb with a preposition on the front, like some of the others. So you don't get the augment coming in between, like you do with those prepositional ones.
So funny, I just noticed, I mean, I should have emphasized that homologeson is imperfect, and anisato is aorist, isn't it?
They're both aorist. Homologeson is it's first aorist active indicative.
Active,
mm-hmm. Exegesito is an aorist middle form, but it's a deponent verb. No, erneisato, excuse me. Yeah.
Deponent.
Yeah, it's from aneomai, or arneomai, excuse me, which is a deponent verb. So it is a middle aorist middle form. And the first is an aorist active form, so it's just a regular. Those are a little bit harder to tell, though. You do have a sigma, see? And that's what tips you off. But the ending, it would be the same for both the imperfect and the aorist in that particular ending.
Wouldn't you say that
in the
aorist
are not? It's from arneomai. It's alpha, rho, nu, epsilon, omicron, mu, alpha, iota. Arneomai. Okay, to deny. All right. Any other questions on that verse? Okay, Mark, verse 21.
Kai e rotiton alton ti un tu ilius e kai lege un te mi.
Okay, good.
O profetis e tu kai abecrite tu.
Good.
And they asked him, what then?
Mm-hmm.
Are you Elijah? And he says, I am not.
Mm-hmm.
Are you the prophet? And this deponent?
Yeah, apokryphe is a deponent verb.
And
he answered.
And he answered, no.
Right, okay. Okay, good.
Isn't that a third person?
Which one? Yeah, it is. It is three person. A third person. He answered.
Saying that they were answered. No.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
Right. He answered, and he answered. Third person singular, first aorist, passive indicative, from apokrinomai. Okay. So it is deponent.
How do you determine that it's deponent?
That's about it. You see that it's an aorist passive ending. That theta is a tip-off. You see more deponents. I know you would. Yeah, that's just it. There's just a. This is not from crino, but crinomai, apocrinomai, and it's got a passive forms, but it's active meaning. Yeah, you just have to get used to watching them. You probably see more passive forms in deponent constructions than you do actual real passives. In other words, if you see passive endings and so forth, I don't want to make any percentages here, but I would be willing to bet that you'd see more often. The way you're going to see middle and passive endings is in deponent verbs more frequently than you will in actual passive constructions, because you don't see passive constructions that frequently. And especially when you have verbs like ginomai and erikomai and so forth, the certain ones that are used so frequently, they tend to be, you're going to see them a lot. One thing here, the editors have different punctuation. The T-un there, T-un or T-un su, is the UBS has, at least my version of it does. And the Westcott and Hort that I have has got T-un and then su alias a. What are your, do your UBSs have the punctuation different?
T-un has a variant.
Oh, they do? Okay. What do they put in the text? Do they put T-un and then put su alias a? Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. My version has T-un su. But I think the version that you have is better. Because you see, if you have T-un su, that means what therefore are you? And it's rather strange to ask somebody what he is. You know, rather than who he is. I mean, the question was his identity rather than what kind of a being he was, you know. So I think that's the reason why they did that. So what, therefore, are you Elias? And he said, I am not. Are you the prophet? And so forth. That fits the construction of the rest of it better. And he said, no. Apokrithē is an aorist passive form, but it's a deponent verb. So just give it aorist active meaning. It means to answer. So and he answered no. Apokrinomai. Apokrinomai is the dictionary form.
Okay.
And your augment.
That still would, is really coming kind of from Apokrinomai.
What's that?
Still coming from Apokrinomai.
Yes, I think originally, yeah. It, and but then you got a the omai gives you.
And therefore. Speaking towards your judgment.
That may be it. That may be the sense of it. And putting it in the krinomai, putting, making a deponent, probably is taking the active sense of judgment off of it. You know, where you're not really actually giving forth a judgment upon somebody else, but you're kind of giving your own judgment. Maybe a middle idea, you know. That's, I think that's possible as far as the derivation. Just giving out your judgment. Yes, sir. Yes. Yes. Yeah, it kind of, because this is a quotation, they're kind of taking you into the conversation. And it starts out and they answered him, who are you? See, you've got, there's no verb here so far, but it's a predication, so you can kind of be taken into it. And then, are you Elias? And he says literally, I am not. And they're all presence all throughout there, you know, the Amy and the Lege and so forth. So that's a good observation. It's kind of taking you into and giving you an exact rendering of the conversation as it was, and at the time that it was said, they were using presence. Good. Okay. And even then, and he says, you know, even apart from the quotation, and he says, you know, it's very, very typical to do things that way. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You see, yeah, see, that's interesting. He says, and then the answer is apokrithē, goes back to the aorist. It's not unusual to do that. And in fact, you might, you know, just as easily see apon or something instead of lege there and put the aorist form for that too. So it's kind of interesting to keep your eye on that. Okay. Verse 22 then, Price.
Apon.
Okay.
So they said to him, who are you? In order that he may give an answer to them that sent us, what you are saying about, I don't know what set out to.
Yourself, it's that reflexive pronoun, sa'au tu. So what are you saying about yourself? In fact, that last one is kind of, ti leges peri sa'au tu. What are you saying about yourself? What do you say concerning yourself? Okay, good. So they said to him, who are you? In order that we may give, there's your subjunctive form, an answer. Apokrisin is a noun now, and that's a noun for an answer. And then domen is to give, and there's your subjunctive form there. So you've got a hina clause of subjunctive. To the ones having sent us, there's an aorist passive participle, an aorist participle, excuse me, to the ones having sent us, and of course the sending is prior to the action of they're asking these questions and so forth. Okay, any other observations or questions about the phrase there? Yes, Glenn?
I'm wondering, when the domen is subjunctive, what kind of meaning are they trying to convey rather than just a simple,
Well, it's got the idea of a... See, they haven't gotten an answer yet, and it's still kind of in the hypothetical realm. So, you know, we want this answer in order that we might give. You might translate it that way in this case, in order that we might give an answer to them that having sent us and so forth. In other words, they are explaining their act, the reason why they're asking the question, and they're talking about the realms of potentiality and possibility and giving an answer back, because they won't have anything to give unless they get some response from him. So. That's why it's in the realm of possibility. And purpose is often expressed this way. Purpose is usually dealing with an action that has not yet taken place, but is intended to be taking place somehow. And one of the common ways of expressing purpose is hina with the subjunctive. It's not the only way by any means, but it's one of the most common ones. Okay, then verse 23, Dale.
Ete, ego, phone, uanto, and te, yuremo, you. Sulisa, Tain Odon, Trio, Kathos, Ibsen, Elias, Prokopate.
Okay, Prokopate.
I think that it's he said.
Yes, he said. Mm-hmm.
I am the voice, or I am voice.
Yeah, I am a voice. You might even translate a voice. Or I am the voice of one. A voice of one crying in the wilderness, maybe would be the best way. I'm a voice of one crying in the wilderness. In other words, he's not really saying I am the voice, but I am a voice of one crying. Okay.
I am a voice crying in the wilderness.
You may want to make that a voice of one crying, because it's got a genitive form of bo-ontos is genitive, and phone was nominative, so
voice of.
Yeah, I am a voice of one. Huh? Yeah, you almost have to make it substantive now if you're going to, you see, because if you've got a genitive participle attached onto a nominative thing, it's not really functioning like an adjective anymore, otherwise it would agree. You would have concord. So the fact that there's no concord, in fact there's genitive, is almost of necessity making it a substantive. Because you can take any noun and put it in genitive and modify any other noun. And that's really what's happening here. So a voice, I am a voice of one crying. Okay. Okay. Yes, to make straight. Yeah, it's an imperative form, and aorist active imperative here. So it's from euthuno, to make straight.
Make straight the way of the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
As said Isaiah the prophet.
Right. Good. As said Isaiah the prophet. Okay? According as Isaiah the prophet said.
I'm going to use the S.A. Where did...
Oh, that... Yeah, that comes from Femi. And that's a me verb.
I'm sorry, but due to a problem with the recording system, approximately 30 seconds was lost, and the answer to the previous question was not recorded. We now resume with the next question in sequence. In the lecture.
Any other questions? Yes, Mark?
You translated I am a voice or just I, voice of one crying?
Probably I would say I am a voice crying because otherwise you don't have any real statement. If you just make it I, a voice crying in the wilderness, you almost have, you know, in other words, in English, sometimes in poetry, you can get by without putting the verb to be in like that. It's almost sounding like the way it was in Greek. But obviously, there's no verb form here, but it's making a predication. You've got a go, nominative, and phone, nominative. So So you just make an equative, you know, it's just a predicate position, a type of construction, predicate nominative construction, actually, more technically, because it's not really an adjective. Because then you go right into the quotation, so there's really no statement being made unless you put a verb in there someplace. Yes?
The way we translated here, the way it translated in King James can be a little bit ambiguous, and so I'm not so clear on this. Should it be, I am a voice of a crying one? Just take out the ambiguity. Should show that it's the, well, show the distinction mm-hmm. that it's.
Yeah, I think so. I think that'd probably be the safest. I'm a voice of a crying one in the wilderness, or one crying one.
I'm a voice. I'm the voice of one crying.
Mm-hmm.
So then the voice of the one
kind of
fused.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
well, yeah.
There's a distinction there. I can't really describe
what it is. Yeah. I can see what you're saying, too. It is hard to describe. The voice of one crying versus the voice of a crying one. And I think what happens there is your emphasis changes a little bit from the one to the crying. You know, that may be the major distinction there. And that may be hard to decide as far as the Greek. There doesn't seem to be anything in the Greek that would really nail that down one way or the other. Both are possibilities there, one crying or a crying one. I think your context has to decide which is getting the most emphasis. But it is clearly not a circumstantial idea, you know. It's not a voice. I am a voice crying in the wilderness. But it's a voice of one crying. You got the substantive idea. Otherwise, you would have had bone toast in the nominative in agreeing with phoné. So I'm not sure what to say about that. Which way you go on that? I think you just have to make a judgment based on the context. Yes.
The problem here, I thought, is that this is quoting the Old Testament.
Yes.
Where it's saying, the voice of one crying in the wilderness.
Uh-huh.
And matter of fact, I can't remember who it was, when another teacher made a point of illustrating this, that it was the voice of one.
Yeah.
You know, God is one. And God was crying in the wilderness, and he was the voice of God, as it were. And this is really...
Yeah, Russ made that in the sermon.
Any crying voice is really saying, because it's, you know... I'm just a crying voice
there. You know? Yeah. One would have to check the Hebrew, too, to see if the Hebrew uses that echad or something like that there, voice of one, or whether the Hebrew just uses a construct relationship, you know, voice of a crying one. I suspect the Hebrew may use a participle in construct, you know. Yeah. What was it, Isaiah 43, somewhere in there, 40 verse 1, 2, or 3 in that neighborhood? Yeah, I wish I could pin it down. I think it's probably verse 3. Yeah, that'd be worth checking there too. But the Hebrew construction would be interesting. If they use echad in Hebrew, then I think we have some justification for making real emphasis on that point. If not, yeah, it would be good to have one in here.
Reminds me, I did look up the Septuagint for Deuteronomy
6:4.
Yeah. I guess this is another class.
Yeah, okay. So that's a pretty good translation, really. Yeah, God one is. Mm-hmm. So and they've got even the verb est in there, so that, yeah, it would really be pretty clear. Any revelation there, John?
No.
Maybe we can check it out a little bit later if you can dig on. Yeah. All right. There are too many Greek classes at the. You get into Hebrew too. This does sound like a Hebrew idiom, you know. It phoné, bon, tos. I mean, it looks very much like what I would expect in the Hebrew to be a construct relationship with a participle for crying. Okay, let's go to the next verse then, while you're doing that.
Isaiah 43:1-3. That's what was throwing up. I was looking.
Oh, okay. It's somewhere else.
Isaiah 40:3.
40. Yeah.
Oh, well,
what were you looking at?
43:1.
Oh, 43. Oh, okay. 40:3. That's what we meant.
That's amazing.
Yeah, okay.
40. Okay. A voice of one calling out.
called Korah, Bamidbar in the wilderness.
Hmm. Okay, Kol Korah. All right, that's just what I thought. It's Kol, his voice, and that's in construct with Korah, which is a participle. Yeah, so it's same, almost identical kind of construction is what we hear, see right here in the Hebrew equivalent of that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's still a substantive. It's one crying. You know, it's a crying one, and it's singular, so that you can get the one from the idea that it's singular. So it's a crying one. Voice of a crying one. One crying. Okay.
It really is a construct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And a participle there. So. All right. Who was next? Got there. Steve, verse 24.
Guy at Festival Minoy, Aton ex Aton Pharisaeum. And that having been sent one?
Mm-hmm. Well, Aeson is just the plural form of the verb to be in the imperfect.
Oh.
So, were.
Were out of the Pharisees.
Yes, good. And the ones having been sent forth were out of the Pharisees. You know, the having been sent forth one. And it's an aorist participle here, so it's the ones who had already been sent forth, you know, were. And the were is still past tense, but the ones having been sent forth occurred before that. And they were of the Pharisees. Okay. Out of the Pharisees. In other words, out of that group. Okay, verse 25. Back to John, then. Now that you're unprepared.
Yeah, that's right.
Digging around in the Hebrew.
Don't help me. Kai, erotis an auton kai epan auto auto. Tivun baptises e su e ho Christos ude eleas ude ho propete.
Okay, good. Get some hypotheticals here.
And they asked him, and see, it comes from Lego, right? And
yep.
said to him,
I might translate T as Y here in this case rather than
Y. Why? Why are you?
Why are you baptizing? Right.
Okay.
And then A.
Okay. Why are you baptizing if you are not the Christ?
Right.
And not Elias, adding the end. Not Elias, not the prophet.
Okay, and not the prophet. In other words, it's kind of this construction. You start with A, and then Udet and Udet. So if if not this, and if not that, if not,
neither.
Yeah, that'd be a way to do it too. If you're not the Christ, neither Elias, neither the prophet. Yeah.
Well, then what does A mean there? There's one A without circumflection, one A with a circumflection.
Okay, the first one.
If
the little particle if, and the second one with the circumflex on it is the verb to be. It's a form of the verb to be. It's a different word entirely. So, in other words, it's if you are not the Christ. The if is the first A with a no accent, and the next A with the accent is the word for are. It's a second person, yeah. Su, A, O Christos. So, that's kind of tricky. So the accent makes a considerable difference there. Is that second bell already? No, that's just the first one. Good. Okay.
I was wondering about that. I need to.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to say what.
Yeah.
What are you?
Yeah.
Therefore, baptizing.
Mm-hmm. Now, T can be used as why also. I think they mentioned it. Usually, you see diat through what the longer form that gives you a little bit less ambiguity. I don't remember what page or where they were talking about this, but I think T was given also. Should have been. Yes, why. It may have been we were just listing the question words or something. It's hard to remember where to find things after you've been through it. T it's kind of the idea of what grounds or what, you know, it's still related to that idea of tea being neuter and kind of conceptual here in this context. They've got given diati. I think it was wherever they gave that, they might have said it there. The tea, just tea for short.
That's better than effort,
on page 233.
233? Okay. Yeah. Yeah, here they talk about it. Bottom page 232, adverbs, poo, pothen, pote, and so forth, posakis, and t, meaning why. And then there's a remark at the top. Context enables us to tell when t should be rendered why and when it should be rendered what. So you have to go by context. The phrase diati, why on what account, is unambiguous. So T is ambiguous, diati is unambiguous, and context has to make the decision. So in other words, in this case, if you translated it what, it would be indeed awkward. You know, what are you baptizing?
People.
People, yeah. But there you would expect it more to be a masculine form or masculine plural, you know, for human beings rather than, you know, I mean, you could have a context in which you come across your little son or daughter, you know, that's got the dog in the bathtub, you know, what are you baptizing, you know? But, yes.
Say, you compare that then to verse 21, he's saying, I am not the Christ, then, well, why, then, you know, why are you...
Oh, why therefore?
Instead of what then? Saying, Tihun, and then Tihun here.
Yeah. It's possible. I guess what they're saying is the context there, the questions that they're asking are for the identity of a person. And here, the question they're asking is with regard to the grounds upon which he's doing this action of baptizing. So the words are the same, but the context may be different. And, of course, there may be some room for debate on some of those things, too. Okay. 26. Who's up next? Jim. Yeah, why that? Okay.
John answers and says, I baptize in water.
He's standing, yeah. Stands, yes. Let's see. Let me check it here. We've got a variation in manuscripts, and the form that I've got in the parsing guide is stake, which would be a singular present active indicative of stako. And so they've got estaken here. There's a hesteken from histemi. So we've got a considerable difference here. Let's see what the...
Four variations.
Yeah. We've got a whole slug of them here. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, stake is the one that they opted for here. Let's see what Westcott and Hort has.